So I noticed I had a listener from Nuremberg, Germany, and I asked this listener, please don't judge me too harshly. Which, of course, is an old-ass reference to the classic 1961 film Judgment in Nuremberg, which is a fictionalized version of the Nuremberg Tribunal, which targeted German Ministry of Justice officials, prosecutors, and judges, basically Nazi war criminals. It's directed by the big-time Stanley Kramer and stars Maximilian Schell, Spencer Tracy as the judge. It's also got Burt Lancaster, Marlena Dietrich, and it's got two great performances by the absolutely ravaged actors Montgomery Clift and Judy Garland. I mean, these two have just been so damaged by life at this point, but they put in compelling performances, and both actors were dead within a decade. It's a great movie, just one of those on the list of must-sees. And I have a thing for actors or people who have like lived a life and suffered and made mistakes, and they just have that look of world weariness. I mean, if you aren't beat up physically and mentally by life after a certain number of years, then you aren't really living. Well, that's my excuse anyway for looking like hell sometimes. Oh, and here's a quick, completely unimportant correction that no one gives a shit about. I think way back in an early episode, I mentioned the Pavement album, Slanted and Enchanted, being released in 1989. I think I was referencing Billy Joel's I Go to Extremes, which indeed was from 1989. But as we all know, Slanted and Enchanted was released in 1992. So sorry about that, Mr. Malkmus. All right, let's talk about apartments, alcohol, and James Garner.
You are my density. You are my density.
And yes, again, folks, this will be a short episode. I'm driving down to move to Los Angeles later this weekend. Last week, I went with my mom. We looked at some places, and I found something decent enough. And if the apartment turns out to suck, well, I can move somewhere else in a year. But of course, I will remain in Los Angeles this time by hook or by crook. And man, you never know with apartments until you live there. You never know. You may look at Yelp, and there's some horrible reviews, and then you move in, and you're like, oh, this is fine. Or vice versa, great reviews, and then the place sucks. Ultimately, all these reviews are just done by people who may have an axe to grind or who may be stupid or whatever, so sometimes you just have to roll the dice. But speaking of shitty apartments, one of my first apartments was literally on Santa Monica Boulevard. I think it was 10555. It was across the street from the Century City Mall. And the apartment itself wasn't, like, super horrible. It was a little grimy, but I had some rocker crackhead that lived above me. And the fucking walls were so thin, and I would hear him walking back and forth, like, all night long. I was like, what can you conceivably be doing up there? It's like, sit down for a while. So this is when I started to develop one of my cardinal rules of living in Los Angeles. Number one, always live on a top floor. In case you are interested, number two is always have a parking spot. Number three is always live close to where you work. And for me, at least, number four is always have air conditioning, because I run hot. And after this apartment, I moved just down the street off of Beverly Glen in Santa Monica, and this goddamn apartment only had a hot plate and no kitchen, and no kitchen sink. And I wasn't, like, eating gourmet meals or cooking much at the time. I was, like, 25 years old, but I would have to, like, dump any food left over or soup or some shit in my trash and clean my dishes in the bathroom sink. Yes, it sucked. Luckily, at this time, I was working at my first job in the vault at a big-time editorial facility in Hollywood, which later on moved to Santa Monica, but my shift was 1 p.m. to 10 p.m., so I ate most of my meals at work. Usually, they were paid for. I mean, unless you're totally loaded, it's like living in Los Angeles means you're going to live in an apartment. It's a trade-off for living in L.A. And speaking of my life in general, I can only sleep like on the flattest pillow in the world. So whenever I go to hotels, like last week when my mom and I went to L.A., I had to, like, construct a pillow of my own. I took two towels and put them in a pillowcase, and that's what I sleep on. I mean, I could almost sleep on a paper towel. It's that ridiculous. What kind of pillow do you like? I don't know. I just don't like my head elevated at all, but maybe I'm weird. Okay, definitely I'm weird. Okay, let's see. Big George Foreman just died. Jesus, what a legend. I always had a sweet spot for George Foreman. My dad knew him slightly in Oakland, and my dad was always a big fan of his. I have a picture somewhere of me and George Foreman. He's like holding me up in his arms. My dad took me to his training camp when he was heavyweight champion. George Foreman grew up in poverty, and admittedly in his youth he was a hoodlum. A pretty bad dude, but hey, I get it. If you have nothing and the system at the time does nothing to help you, then what options do you have? But George Foreman kind of transformed from the scary, baddest man on the planet to kind of a goofy, likable dude who just hit absolute pay dirt with his George Foreman grill. Foreman legendarily got beat by Muhammad Ali. Later on, Foreman retired for a bit, then started fighting again in his 40s, and he became the oldest ever heavyweight champion at 45 when he knocked out Michael Moorer in the 10th round of a fight in 1994. Moorer had been pretty much dominating the fight, but Foreman nailed him with one punch, and it was lights out. Please check out that knockout. I mean, it doesn't look like much of a punch, but Foreman just had heavy hands. Some boxers are like that. And a year before this fight, there was just a weird fucking fight between Tommy Morrison, who was a heavyweight, supposedly a distant relative of John Wayne. John Wayne's birth name was Marion Morrison. Tommy Morrison and George Foreman. Foreman was the aggressor in the Tommy Morrison fight, but Morrison was kind of able to stick and move, and he won the fight. And Tommy Morrison wasn't a great fighter. He was pretty flawed. He did have a power punch, but he was just a troubled dude. He was kind of a mess of a man. He later got into drugs and alcohol, got HIV along the way, and although he always denied it, he eventually died of complications of AIDS. And if you see any later pictures of Tommy Morrison, I mean, the guy is almost skeletal. Just looked like a haunted, tragic figure. And you may have seen Tommy Morrison in the movie Rocky V from 1990. He played a young fighter named Tommy Gunn, who was mentored by Rocky Balboa himself, played by Sylvester Stallone. And Rocky V wasn't great. It was directed by John G. Avildsen, who also directed 1984's Karate Kid and its sequels. Rocky V also featured Stallone's son, Sage Stallone, who tragically died at age 36 of coronary artery disease caused by atherosclerosis, which is pretty weird to die of at that age. But either way, rest in peace, Sage, and who was buried, of course, at Pierce Brothers Memorial in Westwood. And before you mention an older movie with an actor whose voice sounded like he had smoked 8 million packs of cigarettes, I'm still dealing with the nicotine problem. The vaping is complete history, but those damn nicotine gums are hard to shake. I will quit them, just not this week, a la Lloyd Bridges in the movie Airplane. And also, this is just not the right week for me to stop drinking. I will get to it, though, I swear. Alcohol is truly a tricky son of a bitch. It's so socially acceptable, and I never thought I would be a nightly drinker, but man, it sneaks up on you. I mean, yes, you can be a functioning cocaine addict, but it isn't easy. And you could be a functioning heroin addict, but again, that takes discipline, weirdly enough. But man, there are functioning alcoholics in every other goddamn household, almost. So enjoy a drink, my friends, but do be careful. I mean, I never thought I would have any issues with alcohol, and while mine aren't very serious, it's still something I have to actively kind of work on next week. I'm going to work on it next week, okay? And as you know, I'm always looking for random 1980s or 1990s noir that I haven't seen before. And every once in a while, I come across something that is just like catnip to me. I read the popular author James Wambaugh recently died, and I was looking at his obituary, and it mentioned this book, The Glitter Dome, about some Los Angeles detectives. And somewhere in my rapidly diminishing memory, something flickered, however briefly, and I was like, The Glitter Dome? Wasn't that made into a movie? And yes, pay dirt, The Glitter Dome was a 1984 made-for-HBO movie with John Lithgow, Margot Kidder, and Mr. Jim Rockford himself, James Garner. Briefly, Margot Kidder was kind of a tragic figure. She suffered from some serious mental illness. And I remember her being found dazed and confused, super paranoid, cowering in someone's backyard in Glendale way back when. And she was later taken to a psych hospital in Sylmar. And Margot Kidder was so memorable to me as Lois Lane in the movie Superman, the movie from 1978. She eventually committed suicide in 2018 at the age of 69 from a drug and alcohol overdose, but she just painfully, visibly suffered through life, and hopefully she's at peace now. But back to James Garner and the Glitter Dome. Dude, this movie is impossible to find. I had to buy a DVD from Germany, which had probably been transferred from an old crappy VHS tape. The picture was faded, the sound was horrible, and the movie is corny and has a stereotypical cop voiceover by James Garner. But this is just the type of movie that is like Vicodin to me. It just makes me relax, comfortable, and nostalgic. And I have a fairly low voice, but James Garner's voice is so fucking deep. It just sounds so great, so lived in. The dude smoked his ass off. He eventually quit in 2005. He actually cut back after emergency heart bypass surgery in 1988. James Garner had some comedic chops. You know, sometimes his acting was a little spotty or hammy. But then again, he was just one of those big-time, larger-than-life Hollywood characters. I mentioned it before, but check out 1998's Twilight, directed by Robert Benton. It's a noir, very well done, very understated, with Paul Newman as an over-the-hill private detective and James Garner as great as a corrupt old friend of Paul Newman. It's also got Susan Sarandon, Gene Hackman, Stockard Goddamn Channing, and Reese Witherspoon. And James Garner is yet another one of those guys that when I see him, I yearn for a steak and a whiskey. And James Garner actually did some TV commercials for the beef industry, where he would be like grilling steaks and whatnot, and the tagline was beef, real food for real people. But the smoking eventually caught up with James Garner, and he died in Brentwood in 2014 of a massive heart attack at the respectable age of 86. So anyway, I'll continue my search for lost and forgotten 80s and 90s films and keep you posted. I'm getting a bit excited slash nervous about the move to Los Angeles, but it will work out. You always gotta hope for the best, why not? And you never know what the hell will happen in Los Angeles. So let's see where this plot goes.